Hey guys, what's up and welcome back to yet another episode of the Breakthrough Podcast. Now, I know I've been really, really lazy with my episode frequency, but you guys know I've been really, really busy. There's a lot of work that's happening. There's a lot of gigs that's actually started coming towards us. And apart from that, I hope you guys know that I prefer quality over quantity. And talking about quality, you know, we have one of the finest producers from India, my brother, Anish Chengappa. Anish, it's an absolute honor to have you on my podcast because I don't know if you know, but we've been in touch up and down for the last, I don't know, 6-7 years.
Yeah.
Because I'm just a fan of your music. I think I've grown as an artist. I've grown as a fan seeing you from scratch to, you know, eventually doing a thing. But this is more like a, you know, I'm very, 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 very happy to have you on the podcast to actually have a proper conversation. So welcome to the podcast, man. This was a long time coming, but finally you've made some time for us.
Yeah, finally I made it. Thank you so much for having me. And like, I really wanted this to happen long back, but I'm sorry it took so long, but finally we're here and it worked out, you know, and we can have a great conversation right here and discuss some interesting things which might be quite useful for people to know about.
Of course, man. So let's just start from the starting. I think you've been producing music from what, 11 12, I don't know what, 5 6, I don't know how many years you've been doing it. Tell me, how did the whole music journey start? How did you get into music? You know, what's your family background? And then, you know, we take it forward from there.
I've kind of lost track myself. I think it's been at least 11, 12 years since I've been doing it. So basically my sister kind of got me into the music scene, or I would say the electronic music scene, let's put it that way, because she used to listen to a lot of Deadmau5, and my sister is like at least 10 years older than me. So sorry, Aditi, for disclosing your age in some sense. but yeah, basically she got me into Deadmau5, and that's where I kind of started off like, okay, I kind of consider that music itself. I didn't consider that as electronic music, but I was really intrigued to the fact that I was like, this sounds really nice and, you know, modern. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, my sister itself introduced me to a software where you can create music. It was Ableton Live. So, and I was a kid, so I just did it for fun. I just started messing around. But somewhere I felt like this is something which I'll connect to. And I just kept pushing on that software and just kept, you know, having fun with it. It was not like I was trying to be serious DJ or, you know, musician or anything. But it was just something so natural. It was so fun for me to just use that software and not have to actually care about anything. So I kind of got interested into music by doing that. So that's where like it began from. And moving forward, so I think for the next 2-3 years after my sister told me that, back in like 2008 or something like that, 2008, 2009. Okay. That was back like when Deadmau5 used to be a huge thing. Like,
of course, man. Yeah.
And Deadmau5, David Guetta, all these guys. From there, around 3-4 years, I didn't really do too much on Ableton. After that, I saw FL Studio, which was much more user-friendly as compared to Ableton. So
yeah, man.
So I completely switched over to that. And that's where I think I started beginning to understand that this is where I can make music properly without being hella confused as compared to Ableton. So I just kept at FL Studio. And till date, I'm at FL Studio because I've just learned the in and out of FL Studio throughout, whether it's tutorials from online or just going and experimenting myself, looking up the meaning of words and, you know, how dynamics work and compressors and everything work. Everything. Just as a kid, I just kept doing it. And the more I did it, the more I understood. And, you know, I just kept perfecting it.
So was this in like a proper plan? Like, you know, let me become an artist, a producer. Was this your goal when you were a kid? Or was it just like a hobby?
How did this? Well, yeah, I think it kind of turned. It was definitely not a career choice, but it turned into one when I realized that, okay, cool, I actually love doing this stuff. And the funny thing is, actually, I was at one point, I was thinking I would become a golfer.
But, okay.
But my thing completely changed because I realized I was not as passionate about golf as I was about making music. It was just so much more fun to make music and there was no pressure. With golf, you have to have like a very strict routine and you have to be so passionate that you got to become like an athlete. You got to really stick to it. And I felt like I was not as passionate. So that's why I gave that up. And I was like, I'm really passionate about music. This is something I feel like I want to pursue. So I just kept doing music. I didn't think it'd become a career. I hoped. I had no plans for the future. But then when it came to around class 11, 12-ish is when I realized, okay, this could be my career. I started to look at things like, you know, YouTube and places where you can earn money from. And I thought of, as a kid, you always think like earning maybe $5 to $10 is a big deal. And you feel like that'll blow up eventually. But yeah, I mean, that's where it kind of, I kind of had that turning point that, okay, maybe this could become a career.
So what is your parents' reaction? I mean, what's the background? What do your parents do? I know your sister's in the creative field itself.
Yeah.
But, you know, what was their reaction when your son says, you know, I want to be a producer? Because for them, it's like, okay, what is this? You know, it doesn't really make sense. At least for my family, music producer was Anu Malik and, you know, Jatin Lalit and Bollywood kind of guys. So what was their reaction and how did they support you? Because it's a big call, at least in our scene, in the EDM or the dance music scene, it is a big call for us to make this a career. What was their reaction?
So my parents have been extremely supportive of my career from the start. My dad was my first fan, like my proper fan. And I think that works a lot for many music producers. Wow. Your parents end up being your first fans. Obviously I showed my dad the most shitty content I had ever made. My dad has seen what I have started from, like the most horrible, noisy stuff I've ever made in my entire life. He sat and listened through that. Props to him for actually sitting through such horrible music. And he used to give me feedback without telling me that this sounds extremely horrible, which is so cute because I think about it now and I'm like, if I heard my son making this, I would be frustrated. My dad would come back from work and my dad's extremely busy. He's a journalist, so he stays busy throughout the day. So he comes back and then he sits. And then I would be like, oh, I have this new demo and stuff to hear. And it's like, it's all alien to him because he's like this electronic music and all, and he's not heard this. So, but yeah, he's been extremely supportive. So has my mom. And Aditi, of course, my sister, she's always been supportive of it. And she's the one who kind of got me into it. So she's been backing it from day one. But yeah, so they've been extremely supportive throughout my whole journey with music.
So Anish, something very common with me as well is that we kind of figured out, you know, Ableton and Fruity Loops are still figuring it out.
Correct.
In terms of how does this work, what does this do, what does this knob do?
Yeah.
You know, there is a huge, you know, from the starting point to eventually knowing that, you know when you're, for example, your kick sounds good, you know. Mm-hmm. How much time did it take for you to go from, okay, this is really flat to this is, the initial days, you tend to make it more bassy because you feel it sounds good.
Yeah.
When did you know that, okay, now I'm in a good space, I'm sounding, I mean, every producer knows what their sound is, you know, how is it sounding? So how much time did it take for you to, get it done? Reach that stage, yeah, exactly.
So it was kind of tricky. I'm actually not fully aware of when that transition happened, but I'm definitely sure it was during I made Vitality. Basically, when I got into Future House, I started having a deeper understanding of what my mix needs to be sounding like and not just be focused on, okay, I just need to put elements together and put them out. So when I got into that, I remember that took me at least maybe 4 or 5 years to understand how exactly to go about mix and master and how important it is to choose your kick and make sure your side chaining and everything matches properly.
Yeah.
Because that plays such an essential role to how the frequencies match together. Because you'll have in at least electronic music, you'll have a lot of low frequencies. So you need to duck them while the kick is coming in so that you don't have all of them clashing. So it took me a decent amount of time. I would say it took me at least 4 or 5 years before I understood that, okay, this, I need to sit down and technologically figure out how to make this sound good. It's not just a matter of putting everything together. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so since you mentioned Future House, I think that's when I discovered you because we started DJing, Breakthrough started DJing about 2014, 15, somewhere around that time. And marketed ourselves as Future House artists because there's no one doing it. It was a very, very new sound. I think Audio Eldens had just blown up.
Exactly.
And we literally, I remember playing a couple of gigs and we literally had only 30 songs which were Future House-ish, you know. And then we come across and we find, an artist called Anish Chengapan. And like, there's someone from India doing Future House because it was so new.
Yeah, it was very
I remember
new.
Pitching ourselves to clubs as well was, you know, we do Future House. Okay, what is that?
Yeah,
okay, so it was a good mixture between electro and then house. And I think I had about 3 or 4 tracks in our set. We played at Blue Frog and I think 3 or 4 tracks in our set were your tracks, man. And we were like, wow.
Damn. Oh, that's insane.
And that's how I actually got in touch with you. We obviously spoke over, a couple of tracks here and there.
Uh-huh.
And Future House was something that is what was common between us.
Yeah.
And specifically at that time, it was so new. There's Oliver Heldens. I mean, everybody was playing 9 out of 10 tracks in a Future House set with Oliver Heldens, I think.
In fact, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think Future House was definitely my turning point for my career because I picked up on that genre. And it was like people like Oliver Heldens who inspired me to say, okay, cool, this is a new kind of genre which I really connect with. So that is what I actually wanted to push at. So that's why that year when Future House was popping, I was like, okay, I need to create more of this. This is what I love doing. So that's why I pushed at that genre as much as possible. And that's why I feel I blew up that year.
I think of course you got a lot of support from House Nation, all these, you know, really popular channels,
Future House playlists.
And I think because anywhere we were searching for music in terms of Future House, we saw your name popping in and we were like, dude, this guy is killer. And you know, I mean, in fact, even in Pune, nobody really knew it was your music and we were slamming the tracks and you're like, okay, wow, this is someone who no one really knows.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been like supporting your music from a long, long,
wow,
long time.
Wow, I really appreciate that. I can't believe it. I still find it uncanny when someone says that to me. Because because as a bedroom producer, you still feel like you're the only person listening to your own music. You know, I know I have listeners on Spotify and stuff, but when someone else tells you that they're playing them your music out there somewhere, it just feels different. Like I've not reached that stage yet, at least not for me.
So Anish, one of the biggest chunks I want to talk about your music journey is your the poster boy for, you could say, an independent artist. You know, a lot of artists are doing this in hip hop, where they're making their own videos, they're making their own tracks, they're writing their own lyrics, they're promoting, marketing themselves.
Yeah.
For me, I think about 2014, 15, I think you were literally the poster boy for, or not just in India, I think you had more fan following abroad.
Correct, yes.
On the international YouTube space, where people are, you know, continuously checking out your music. So tell me, how did this thing happen that, you know, let me not go to record labels? Because I think apart from about one or two tracks, I think back in the day, I think you made a decision to not you go to record labels. Was that like a conscious kind of a decision, or what exactly is the scene?
So I actually was very in this thing that I need to get a label, like around that time itself, which was like 2015-14 ish, was that I need to get a label because that looked like the go-to to become big.
Yeah.
But then I kept sending demos and I was like, I'm reaching a dead end at every point. I need to do something new because I'm not making anything happen. And at some point I realized it was like, it's just music end of the day. So if I can just put this out myself and make myself market this the same way these record labels are doing it, maybe I can gain the same amount of popularity. So instead of focusing on just pushing to record labels, which also seemed like a very long process. So there were multiple things coming into like in my mind when I was thinking I have to send it to a record label, because then it means you got to wait for a response. Then once they respond, then there's a whole procedure as to when you can have a release date, which might be a month from now or so. So all that was like, I want to make a song and I want to have it out within 1 week or 10 days. I don't want to make my fans wait for a month before I have another song out, even though it might be worth it through the marketing of the record label. But I was more like, this gives me the freedom. If I'm an independent artist, I can distribute my music myself. I can make whatever music I want at any point, not being, you know, this thing to the record label that, oh, I want to switch my genre or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and also I get to keep most of the royalties. I might have to give some to the distributor who's distributing my music, but at least I keep the majority of my royalties.
Of course.
And of course, I chose a distributor which gives me very clear-cut graphs which show me how much I'm earning from each track. So that way I can keep track of that.
I'll just stop you right here. Uh-huh. So for all the listeners who've just kind of gone into production and are not getting record labels, and there's no one interested in their music, just want to talk about the whole distribution channel. I mean, now we are all equipped with enough of knowledge in terms of how do we get a distributor. If you could just tell us what your process is, which distributor do you use, how much does it cost, so people probably get more understanding on how or what would be the right way to kind of distribute your own music.
So for me, I personally use Repost Network, which is now, when I joined them, it was like 5 years ago or something like that. So I kind of got grandfathered into the program. Earlier, it was free. They would take a certain percentage from you. I don't know if that has changed or not, but they took 20% from me at that point. Okay. I don't know if it has changed now, but yeah. And after that, they've got merged with SoundCloud. So now if you sign up with SoundCloud, they actually automatically tell you to go to Repost Network in case you want to distribute your music. But since I got grandfathered into the program, so I don't have to pay any subscription fee. But I think for users, there is a certain subscription fee, which you pay like, I think somewhere between $50 to $100 for the year. I'm not 100% about this. I have not checked up because I naturally didn't have to do any of that. But Repost Network is extremely great in that way, and they've been for me, it's very essential that there's good communication between the distributor and the artist, so that if I'm having issues with my release, or you know, if I want to have some extra things done, or if I need to figure out something regarding my song, someone is there to help me. So Repost Network did that really well, and it was very essential that they show me what I'm earning from, like which tracks. It's not that they just send me money saying, okay, this is the track which made that much. I want to see like how many streams did I get, and how those streams got monetized and how much money I got. So Repost does that in an excellent way by giving me statements and allowing me to download Excels, which show me exactly how much I earn from each track.
Yeah, I think data is really, really important for even for me in terms of the podcast. Like, I know which podcast is doing well, which part of the podcast is being heard well. I think for all you guys listening, it's really important to kind of make sure that you choose a distributor who gives you the right data. I think for us, we use DistroKid.
That's pretty good as well
for us. Yeah, DistroKid is pretty simple and easy for us. There's, I think, so CD Baby. I mean, make your own choice.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mention the rest. Actually, I mean, all of these platforms are great. I was just personally saying that I went with Repost Network, but I've heard that DistroKid and all of these platforms, CD Baby, they all do a good job in distribution. It's all just about what suits you the best. You know, what are you comfortable with? What are the details you want? So before you go ahead and submit something to a distributor, make sure you check that you're getting all of this out. If whether it means writing them a mail or something, just, you know, get all the things which you feel you require before you sign up with someone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get your money's worth. That's all.
Great. Any tips in terms of on what date do you release your track? Do you release it earlier? Do you release it later so it comes on Spotify playlist? Anything in terms of that you do that worked for you?
So, I mean, I'm still trying to figure this out because it's kind of tricky. These guys, they keep changing their algorithms and, you know, it's just very tricky with how you go about it. But I think the one thing I've learned as of now is that, one, you should definitely have your release submitted 2 weeks prior to when you want it out. Mm-hmm. And also, you should try to have it out by maximum like Thursday mm-hmm. or Wednesday also would do. Because what happens is if you release it on Thursday or Wednesday, eventually it will reach the release radar on, if we're talking about only Spotify, then it will reach the release radar by Friday. So you should have it before Friday. If you'll have it on the, I mean, I guess it would work if you have it released on the Friday itself, but you don't know how that will work for every country. Because every country has a different time zone. So I would say get it by Wednesday, Thursday, because you'll have higher chances of hitting the release radar.
All right. Also, in terms of Spotify, I think, Anish, you were one of the first. I think you were active on Spotify when it was not even available in India. Through a VPN or whatever.
Yeah.
And I mean, when I was back in the day, I was very, very hooked onto Spotify. Over 5 million streams across. I mean, how does it feel? What goes into it? I mean, 5 million streams. One of the few people in India who get hard. That number. You know, how does it genuinely feel when, you know, over 5 million people are listening to your music globally?
I mean, it was kind of, the whole Spotify thing blew up on me because I'd been doing it for a while, just that I never expected it to show me any kind of rotation at some time. You know, I was just like, I want to put my music on Spotify because I know many people are going to use it someday. So when the whole Martin Garrix thing happened, that's when I kind of started to see that, okay, this is a huge thing. And Spotify actually pays relatively well, at least at that point. The mm-hmm. years where I started gaining a lot of streams, they paid me quite well in terms of their streams. But I mean, it was unbelievable to even I still can't think about the fact that, you know, I've reached 5 million. But obviously now I'm like, okay, 5 million is too less. I need to push harder than that. But yeah, I mean, it still feels weird to me that my music has been heard so many times.
All right. So I'm.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to put another point in there that I was not expecting my song Tubes, which actually has the most amount of streams right now.
Tubes is what, 2 million, right?
Yeah, it's at 2.5 million. So I was this was not the track which I expected to have so many listens on. I was like, either Fruit Juice or Blue, which are both tropical songs, would have a lot of streams. But Tubes end up having the most amount of streams. So that kind of shocked me. Then that kind of taught me as well that it might be one odd track of yours, which someone, you know, Spotify's algorithm or something pushes, and that will get the most amount of streams. So it doesn't matter. Actually, if you begin your career by just releasing a bunch of music and eventually one of your song tops off, then Spotify somehow has this way of kind of pushing all of your music to all those listeners. And if they connect to it and save it more often, then they start pushing that song more. So that's how that song became so popular.
Wow. So, I mean, since Spotify has worked really, really well for you, and I'm obviously nowhere near even a million or even probably 10,000 plays on Spotify. Tell us if you could just run through the numbers, if you could just give us a ballpark figure, especially because there are a huge number of people are looking at this as a source of income. Mm-hmm. You know, not everyone's, I mean, especially post-COVID, not everyone's going to get as many gigs, not anyone's going to get the same price you should get paid earlier.
Correct.
So if you could just run through a ballpark figure, say if I get about 10,000 streams on a track, what approximately it would be my earning in dollars or in rupees or whatever.
So I would say if you're getting around, they keep changing, by the way, it's just up to them. But if you get around 10,000, I think you could be expecting at least $50. I think that's how much you could be expecting. But it just changes. You know, what I realized is that if you have a lot of streams on a track and then you keep getting more streams on that, you get more per play.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a strange algorithm. I still haven't got a hook on to exactly how much you get paid. But if you get 10,000 streams, I think you should easily be able to make $50 out of it. That's how much I know. But
you're trying to be very discreet about this because you don't want anybody to know how much exactly you're making. There's so much of chaos in terms of on YouTube because they're like such weird, vague numbers and figures that you get. Yeah. But yeah, of course, I've heard myself that, you know, it's doing, I mean, it's pretty good for the artists as well. And of course, your distribution channel will separately give it to you on whatever the platforms your music is playing. So I think that works really well. But
yeah,
your main focus is definitely Spotify. If that's right?
Well, I do try to focus mostly on Spotify, but I know other platforms. So I think the best way for producers or any music producer to go about it, if you're going independently, is to think about the fact that you want to deliver all your music to all the platforms you can, because you don't know where you're going to have listeners end of the day. So if you're going to have any listeners on different platforms from different places, even if it's like 0.001 cents which you're earning per stream, all of that becomes accumulative and makes you earn $2-3. So just put it out there. Just put it on all platforms and those will eventually collect up to a good sum of money. So don't be like, okay, maybe this place, I don't want to give them my music. Just give it to every single platform and just hope for the best. You know, you never know which country is going to start grooving to your music and give you the most amount of cash.
Of course, man. Yeah. And actually nowadays, I mean, recently, like, I mean, not until it was banned, but TikTok and all of these things were like really, really important boosters for your music to blow.
Yeah.
I see like a lot of these, I think Yash Mukhate, these dialogue producers. So they've like, they just blown up, man, because of the whole TikTok, the reels kind of the short video format. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good, that's a very good thing. So for all the producers who are producing probably hip hop or, you know, pop music, I think a fun tip is, so DistroKid is the distribution partner that we have. They also, you know, send your music through TikTok. Okay. So I think through Instagram and TikTok. So that's a good idea for someone who's making, you know, a very poppy kind of a music, you know, music or Bollywood or whatever. That really works. That will definitely help you guys.
Yeah, definitely. Even Repost Network does that, by the way.
Yeah.
They also send it to TikTok and Instagram.
Great. Coming to your breakthrough track, I think Fruit Juice was the track that actually knocked your career out of the park. I think getting support from Martin Garrix, at that time, number one DJ of the world, and still now, till now, I mean, one of the most popular DJs in the world. How does it feel? And I know you've answered this a million times, but how does it feel to actually get support from someone who's world renowned?
It was, even back then, even though it's been like, I think 4 years now since it's happened, even then, it still feels kind of unreal to me because I have no clue as to how exactly he heard the song.
Okay.
So I have no clue, but I do used to send out a lot of mails and I still do. Every time I release a song, I sit down and I have a mailing list of around 50 to 100 labels and artists who I just send the track to, even whether they're listening to it or not. I've just made it a routine of mine to send out a bunch of mails and keep refreshing that mailing list in case some mailing lists have gone or, you know, whatever it is. Add new people. Every time I release a track, I first do research on what new mailing lists I need to make. And then I send out a bunch of mails. So I think somehow some mail reached Martin Garrix, either through another artist or another label, or I have no clue. But someone suggested my track to him and that's how he featured it. And that definitely, like him featuring that and then him becoming number one DJ like 1 or 2 months after that when the DJ Mag listings happened. And that gave me the career boost that I needed because what happened after that was I was able to pitch. So I got an event manager who is a friend of mine who used to do events anyways, but I had nothing to pitch. Like, I can't just say I just make music, right?
Yeah.
You need some kind of, you know, support or something where you can say, okay, now I can play in clubs because this guy's been supported by this. So that became a great pitch to sell because I think I was at that time the only Indian DJ who got supported by Martin Garrix, who's an individual DJ, you know, not backed by a label or anything. So that really helped him get events for me. So I think those next 2 years after that, I did almost 40 to 50 shows, all thanks to Martin Garrix supporting me. And the funny thing is like, it still feels so unreal to me that just one DJ supporting me got me so many opportunities. And then I kind of tell that to more producers, whoever speaks to me on Instagram or something like that, I tell them that you got to keep making out good quality and keep sending it out to people, because eventually that, and you got to make sure that that one song makes a good impression on someone, so that after that you never know if that person decides to support it, you can use it as an anchoring point for you to pitch for shows, you know.
Of course.
So yeah.
And what was your inspiration for Fruit Juice? I mean, the name itself is a bit Fruit Juice.
So actually,
what is the inspiration?
It was a bit strange. I think I was on vacation with my family. We were in Greece or something, and I was working on that track out there during our free time. Okay. I think my parents were out looking for something, or, you know, doing some sightseeing, which I was not interested in. So I was sitting on the laptop and working on this track. And obviously at that point, I was not like, I was just making music for fun. And that, I think that was one of the times when I was like in my complete flow of making music. I was like just churning out content every 10 days without caring about anyone or anything else that happens, because I just felt like this is what I want to do. So I think that idea came to my mind when I was hearing the track. Firstly, it sounded so tropical to me.
Of course,
so
yeah.
I was like, I need to name this, and then I need to build something around it. That's how I used to go about tracks. And I think I kind of still do, which is, so if I figured out that Fruit Juice is going to be the title, and at that moment I was actually having a fruit juice, so I decided, okay, let me just go ahead and name it this. And so when I named it this, then I was like, okay, I got to do something. So that's why I added the sounds of, you know, juice being poured into a glass in the beginning of the song. And then I added this kind of beachy environment, which makes it feel like you're at the beach, and give it this ambience. So all of those elements started coming together, and the track started sounding really good. So I think that's how I kind of went about the title of Fruit Juice.
And I mean, your titles, I'm just browsing through your track names, Time, Metro. I think Metro, I love Metro because there's a sample you've used of, I think, the Delhi Metro.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, this is amazing.
Used my phone and just recorded that, and I was like, I got to use this.
Yeah, man. Also, Anish, I don't see you do a lot of collaborations. I think a couple of collaborations just with your sister, but any particular reason why you don't work with someone else? Or because I'm pretty sure many people have approached you for a collab.
Yes.
Why isn't that happen? Why isn't any collaboration with Anish Chengappa out?
So I actually haven't done collaborations as yet, because I felt it was more easier to work with someone if they're sitting right with you, rather than, you know, doing it as a online communication. Because firstly, you got to exchange softwares, and as in you got to exchange project files and stems and keep going back and forth. So that was a tricky process for me to figure out. Moreover, I think I was just not fully comfortable with the fact of a collaboration at that time, because I was like, it's too complicated to understand how all this works. And all the artists I was being approached by, it was not seeming like legitimate enough for me to actually get into it fully. So I was I want to do collaboration, but I'm not sure exactly who I want to collaborate with. So that's why I just said, okay, for now, I'm just going to leave it at that. Even though it definitely does not push my career forward if I don't collaborate with more people. So moving forward this year, I definitely wanted to collaborate with more artists. But at the same time, I'm still kind of stuck on that theory that I need to sit with a person, because I think you only vibe, like when you have a jam session and you're making music with instruments, then you're actually sitting with a person and you're enjoying yourself talking with them and doing all of those things. But I think at least now in this day and age, I can do that with Zoom and everything, now that everything has shifted so online. So
yeah.
I think that's what me and my sister have been doing, because my sister lives in Hyderabad. So and I live in Delhi. So I've been doing Zoom calls and doing recording sessions with her. So I realized actually this could work out. So Zoom has actually kind of totally changed my mindset on how I can collaborate with artists in the future. So I've actually now, unfortunately, have I started becoming open to more collaborations.
Yeah. So looking forward to some good collabs. I think, we need to hear some new music.
Yeah.
Your frequency of your tracks also has dropped down. I mean, getting about 8 to 9 tracks in a year, which is, you know, above average. But I think back in the day, about 2014, 15, I think 16, there was a track every 6 days, every 7 days, every 8 days. And I was like, shit, what is this guy doing? Where does he get all of this shit from? Was it like, you know, I mean, is it a call that, you know, let me take some more time, or you want to focus more on the quality, or, you know, what exactly is your thought process in terms of your frequency of your tracks?
So I think in between, I took a break for almost a year, because I'd done so many shows. And I think I took a break in 2019. Yeah, it was around that time. And it was also because I started working for an ad agency to make music for their ads, and, you know, just music work as a music director instead. So that took up a lot of my time, and I couldn't have enough time to focus on just putting out music. So I think And at some point, it was also during the time when I was kind of transitioning from the fact that I want to make more music than just making house music, because okay. I had so many other interests in genres like R&B, jazz, and soul music that I was like, I'm not doing these things, even though I love listening to it. So I listened to a bunch of this music and I play these songs on repeat, but I started to recognize that I play these songs more than I play the house music songs when I'm relaxing. But if I'm like at a party or something, then I play a lot of the house music stuff. So I realized I need to do something where I can get both of these in. So that's why I think this year I'm planning to move more towards a zone which also allows people to see that I'm able to do this stuff. Whereas to make a different side of music instead of just sticking to house music, which is more like a party side of music, as people would put it, or a layman would put it, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think
there's a lot of influence of jazz music and I think R&B and stuff. So that's what you can expect from me this particular year.
Yes.
Going forward.
Definitely you will. I think so. I want to leave it kind of open-ended so people don't know what to expect. But okay. I would say I'm heavily influenced by those genres, but I will definitely come up with something fresh. It will not just be R&B and jazz, but it will be a mix of somewhat like futuristic and electronic elements to keep things fresh, you know. You guys will see. I have a song coming out, hopefully.
All right. So, Anish, I think in terms of the whole internet boom, I think you're one of the first people who kind of blew out in the whole internet scene. Mm-hmm. But production is a very lonely process. And you know, you've actually been one of the lucky few who got very, very good recognition very early. What would be your advice or your tip to artists who are, you know, spending most of the time, locked up in the bedroom, trying to get music outside? What would your suggestion be, unless they get that big particular, you know? So what would you suggest?
So I would say, I mean, I'm also kind of dealing with the fact of how to market myself and how to make it better. So it's a tricky process. But I think the first place to start with, if you're just starting out, is to understand the music that you like and try to nitpick. So I actually mentioned this a couple of times in other interviews and podcasts, is that you got to nitpick from the things that you like. All the music that you listen to, try to take out elements and try to understand what is it exactly that you like about that music. Try to take out those things and try to replicate those in your own way and combine all the elements that you like from different songs and music and try to make your own thing. So this will be the first part of it, which is to make good music which sounds authentic and sounds like you. Obviously, then we get to the part where you have to distribute the music and market it and, you know, try to actually make good money or, you know, make a career out of it. So if you're a bedroom producer, your first job would be to actually find music which connects with you. And obviously, that's if you have the resources. I have been lucky enough, very fortunate to have the resources for my dad to say, okay, sit in your room and make music all day. But because he allowed me to have that freedom, I was able to sit and peacefully make music all the time. So that would be the first process, is to make good music. And then the second process, when you're marketing yourself, definitely focus on how you're looking. How do your profiles look? How do your graphics look? What impression do you want to show your people? Make sure your descriptions are in place. You know, and keep things very professional and clean looking. At least that's what I do. I feel like I want all my profiles to look nice and clean, very understandable. And when someone comes there, even if I don't have a million listeners or anything, they will just still feel like I'm doing a really professional job and that eventually someday this person will get somewhere if he continues like this. And it puts an impression in someone's mind that, okay, this person is really trying hard and putting all of its effort into making something good out of their career, you know?
I remember this because I think back in the day around 16, 15 again, is when you're making the music, first of all, it was hard enough to replicate the quality that you are at. And then you used to get your cover art. You used to have all those visualizers, which I don't know, Trap Nation has that thing.
Exactly.
I was like, how is this guy getting it? And I'm trying to figure out, how do I do this myself? And for all the listeners who've not actually heard of Anish, go to his YouTube channel, go to his Instagram. You know, you'll see very neatly done artworks and cover arts and stuff like that. And tell us about that, man, because I think you do your own particular, your cover art and your everything is done by you in terms of the whole package.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you could just tell us about how do you do that.
So that reminds me of a point which you mentioning all of this is that you got to keep up. Basically, you got to keep up with the latest designs and you got to keep looking at what other artists are doing in terms of their artwork and stuff. So that's what I try to do with my artwork. Now that I've got a really good understanding over the years, I started off with really bad artwork, by the way. So literally all the content you've seen on my YouTube has been created by me, starting from the first track, which I have is just called Wonderland, which is, I don't know, 10 years ago now it was uploaded. That was the worst artwork I've made. I made it on PowerPoint. It was so bad. But starting from there, I started to move forward and keep looking at what labels are doing and how they're improving on their artwork. And then eventually I reached this point where I was like, I need to figure out how to do this myself. So I just watched YouTube videos and research. Literally any person can do this. But I think end of the day, what happens is you got to have a good sense of design. So you got to make sure you keep looking out for what's happening there and try to find your own way of doing it. Don't just copy them. So that's what, with me, I picked up on After Effects, I picked up on Photoshop, Paint, everything which I could to make sure that I get really good artworks out there. And then I kind of figured out my own unique way of looking at things and, you know, how I want to make my artwork look and what kind of impression I want to give my listeners when I'm putting this music out. It needs to look like it's high quality music. And, you know, both the visuals and the music should go head to head with each other so that it gives you that experience altogether. So it was a tricky task learning the graphics and everything, but I think it pays off because end of the day, I feel satisfied that I've taken out good content and that I've given it my best shot from all ends. And even if it doesn't get listeners, it's just how the world is. But at least if you've given it your best hand in terms of graphics and music, you have a better shot at getting someone to look at your music. You know?
All right. So Anish, we're almost done to the end of the podcast. Before I let you go, any advice, any tips for all the artists who are or the new coming artists who are coming into the whole music scene? Any parting words for, you know, for the artists?
So I would say as per tips, for me personally, I think I did a lot of house music, so I wanted to shift genres.
Okay.
So a big tip would be to focus on trying to understand what exactly is the music you like to put out rather than focusing on this is the music that'll sell. Mm-hmm. Because the music scene will keep changing. So you never know what will sell at what moment. You got to create the thing that sells. Obviously, okay. Don't just push at it from the standpoint that, oh, I could just create music which doesn't sell at all. You got to keep a balance between understanding what is commercial and also making sure that you enjoy making that music and not just pushing for the, you know, fame factor or the I'm going to get shows and, you know, get to be like this person. So I think that's a big point. And also to understand how to do mixing. Mixing, I think, is some people kind of don't pay attention to that because they feel if I just put a bunch of elements together, it'll eventually sound good. But and to them, it sounds good. But they forget that there are many people who are going to listen to this with their own sense of hearing music. So yeah. Whenever you're doing mixing, make sure you compare your music to other people's music and then come back to your music and compare that and keep going back and forth before you get a final mix down. And keep adjusting your volume levels. Keep improving on the mix down. And that's, I think, one of the biggest tips I've always mentioned in my interviews, because whenever I receive demos and stuff from producers, I always find flaws in the mixing, which actually takes away from the song. Even though the song sounds good, I know it can sound good, but it's just the mixing which is lacking. So the quality, I think that would be one of my major points if I had to end with.
All right. Mr. Anish Chengappa, it was an honor to have you on the podcast. It's always been fun chatting with you. For all those guys who haven't heard of Anish, I'm going to be adding in all of his links. I'm going to be adding a link to his track Fruit Juice, which was supported by Martin Garrix. Also, please check out his Instagram. What's your Instagram handle, bro?
It's Anish Chengappa, @AnishChengappa.
Check out his origami and all his stuff that he does. Really, really cool stuff. But Anish, it was awesome having you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for
having
me.
I look forward to having you on the episode more often. This is like your podcast, bro. So whenever you're free,
100%.
Drop by. And whenever you're in Pune or whenever I'm in Delhi, we should definitely catch up.
100%. I think that would be a great idea.
And thanks again for coming on the podcast. Looking forward to some new music. Looking forward to some more collaborations and looking forward to you performing in Pune whenever you can. You know, we're going to be around.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I hope everything pans out good for this year. I want to end on that note that 2021, everyone is hoping for really good results. So I hope it all pans out and everyone has a great time this year, you know.
Of course. Yeah. Cheers, guys. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I shall see you guys soon. And that was the episode, guys. Thanks for tuning into the Breakthrough Podcast. I'm getting mad love from all of you guys from the fraternity. Continue sharing, but definitely consider subscribing, following, liking, doing all that good stuff. This definitely helps me a lot.